Guy, after 4 very long months of a delay, we are, as we record this, on the cusp of a resolution, assuming it holds together, of the budget battle that has been taking place in Harrisburg since way back in late June. What are we looking at here in terms of the agreement that it appears has been struck?
The government can be back in business, which means that importantly, practically in our lives, that payments to social services and nonprofits and to school districts will restart. The money going to counties to pay for things like our libraries will restart. So that's the good news. Beyond that, the budget itself and what it does, look, the bad news. The bad news is this will be the first budget that will cross the $50 billion threshold. It is a multi-billion dollar increase from last year. And aside from being a conservative that does not see or like that government grows exponentially, for no reason, we're not at war, there's not an emergency. Look, the bigger problem is that no one doubts, including the governor, no one disputes, this budget will spend more money than we bring in. This budget will spend billions of dollars, probably between $3 and $4 billion that we bring in tax revenue. The only reason they're able to do it is because of good stewardship in the past in making sure that in prior years we had savings. Say to you, Loman, it's like a family. You've put money aside, you've saved just in case times get tough, and this year mom and dad are going to make $100,000, but they're going to spend $130,000 to keep the house going. You can't do that for very long because if mom and dad only make $100,000 a year, spending $130,000 because you have some savings set aside is a formula for disaster eventually for the family. For all of us in the Commonwealth, it's a problem. So that's first and foremost, I think, the leading part. The Republicans in the Senate were able to make him spend less than he wanted. The governor wanted to spend actually almost $2 billion more. They were able to negotiate it down, and thankfully we have the savings. Beyond that, I would think the biggest thing of note, which we probably won't see benefit short-term but long-term, Pennsylvania will withdraw from the horrible compact known as REGI, which is the multi-state agreement that basically punishes and penalizes people who produce energy for us to try and encourage to have wind turbines and solar panels. And being a state like ours, where thousands of Pennsylvanians work in the gas, coal, nuclear, and oil industries and in the people who support them, and where almost everyone listening has their home heated or powered by coal or natural gas, that's good news. The last thing we need is the whole country's talking about affordability is to have policies in place that we're going to make our utilities go higher. So that's probably the best news, that Pennsylvanians are going to get out of this compact, which would have punished everybody who produces energy, and we'll get back to common sense. I hope long-term that really yields benefit and returns us to where we should be, which could be the leading energy-producing state in the nation.
And, of course, as a result of REGI, we have seen investment in natural gas in particular sort of sitting on the sidelines waiting to see what happens. Hopefully all that pent-up capital will now flow as a result. So, yes, Guy, having REGI removed from the picture, certainly a huge victory. The spending issue, we're probably going to have problems down the road. Next week with our Capital Watch crew, I'm sure we will dissect the budget a lot more. But our main point that we wanted to talk about today with Guy is what's holding Pennsylvania back? He recently wrote an article that appeared in Real Clear Pennsylvania and other places about that. And Guy, it seems like survey after survey, group after group, every time they do a ranking of state competitiveness, state growth, we rank near the bottom. Why is it with all the resources we have, our natural resources, the fact that we are geographically positioned literally, as our name would denote, as the Keystone State in the Commonwealth? Let's talk about some of the reasons why, despite all that, we don't fare real well relative to other states. Why is that?
You raise a good point. Look, and I'll tell you, I'll begin first by telling your listeners why it matters. Why it matters is the reason we just had 140 days of a state budget shutdown. Why? Because we don't raise enough revenue because we're a stagnant economy. I'm willing to bet a nickel that this time next year or next, you know, budget season, there's going to be fights again. And not only because the two parties disagree, but because our revenues in the state are stagnant. And they're stagnant because we're not a growing economy. We're not Florida. We're not Texas. We're not Tennessee, North Carolina. These states with growing economies. And you hit the nail on the head. I make sort of the cynical joke. For a state that has energy, agriculture, life sciences, technology, more universities per capita than almost any state, and all the assets, you almost have to try to fail. You almost have to try to fail because most states don't have what we have. And they certainly don't have the breadth and depth. I mean, in a sense, we almost have the assets to be almost recession-proof or inflation-proof or any downturn because we have financial powerhouses like, you know, PNC Bank and Vanguard and the major financial institutions across the state. We have agriculture that is diverse as mushrooms to milk. We have life science hubs in greater Philadelphia, the Lehigh Valley and Pittsburgh. We have wonderful hospitals that people do travel to from around the country to come and be treated. And we have more energy under our feet than Saudi Arabia. Add to that the technology hub in Pittsburgh, where Google actually has one of its headquarters. And you'd look and say, gosh, you have universities, natural resources, agriculture, and as you said, water, rail, and roads to get our products anywhere to Canada, South America, Europe, and across the United States. Why? Well, to me, it comes down to a few things. First and foremost, you can't succeed if you don't try. And we really haven't had a governor that set out a path of growth, of raising our expectations of hope since Governor Ridge. And now that's going back to the early and mid-1990s. It's been 30 years since Pennsylvania's had a business plan. It's hard to raise money to start a business. It's hard to grow your local Italian restaurant if the owners don't sit down and say, well, we currently have seating for 40. What could we do to expand this restaurant to serve 60? What would happen? How could we save enough money and grow our business to open a second location? You can't open a second location unless that's your hope and your goal, and you don't sit down with a plan. This is a state that doesn't have a business plan. We don't have a five-year plan. We don't have a growth plan that say, how do we make sure our universities are training people for energy and agriculture? How are we integrating life sciences into our medical community? How are we training people, our students in high school, to learn the opportunities? So first, we don't have a plan. And then the second is one of the third rails in Pennsylvania politics we don't talk about. We have too many local governments, and they have way too much power. And that offends Democrats because Democrats love government. And the more layers of government and the more checkers and overseers and bureaucrats pushing paper, the better. And I know it bothers Republicans because we like local government. We don't want Washington or Harrisburg to have all the power. We want our local community leaders to decide what goes on in our community. And in theory, that makes sense, and it's admirable. The problem is we have too many. We have nearly 5,000 local governments. We have nearly 1,000 more than California. And California is 5 times the size of us. And California is not exactly the model of efficiency. And those local governments have way too much power over projects. Again, in your local community, you want to decide how the roads are. You want to decide what type of homes. You want to make sure you have different water systems for sewage and what have you. But when we're talking about multi-billion dollar projects in energy or healthcare, with all due respect to somebody who was a township supervisor myself, you were a local office holder, somebody was a planning commissioner, I don't know that we want any group of 3 or 5 men and women sitting in a room deciding whether multi-billion dollar investments are going to take place or not. These should be done on a more regional level, as most successful states do. We have 500 school districts. Florida has one district in each county. We have far too many school districts. So what does that mean? We pay for too much bureaucracy. And as I said, too often, there's too parochial a view, and I say this as a true believing conservative. I just think sometimes bigger projects. The other issue is our schools aren't doing well, our public schools. America's public schools are falling behind the world. Pennsylvania's are falling behind even America's standards. And in our urban areas like Philadelphia, Harrisburg, Reading, and Pittsburgh, they're even worse. We lost out on Amazon putting their Mid-Atlantic hub in Philadelphia. They put it in D.C. Why? Amazon said in their report after the fact, we weren't convinced that the greater Philadelphia region could give us a continued workforce that could work in the technology area. So it's pretty basic. If you don't have a plan for success, you won't grow. If you have too much government bureaucracy, cost, and regulation, you can't grow. And if you don't have a workforce, people won't come here. High taxes, high regulation, limited workforce is not exactly a welcome sign. And you go back to the beginning. Loman, with all that we have, it should not be that way. We should be a top five economy. WalletHub just rated us 44th, and the report was there's a lot going on in Pennsylvania, most of it negative. That should not be our story. We should not be losing out to 46 other states with all that we have. But step one, like solving any problem, you need a business plan that says we're committed to turning it around.
Pennsylvania's population, of course, is growing less rapidly than other states, which, among other things, costs us congressional districts every 10 years or so. But, Guy, the fact that we have people leaving Pennsylvania, taking their earnings with them, there was a report out this past week that the state of Florida in the last 10 years has seen a net increase in the income of all their citizens combined, of over $1 trillion because of inflow of population and migration, but Pennsylvania is going the other direction. With all the educational opportunities and everything we have, how do we stem that outflow of talent from Pennsylvania?
You raise a great point. I mean, one of the ways you solve budget crisis is by growing revenue. And you can't grow revenue if your population is getting stagnant and older. The fastest growing demographic in Pennsylvania is people over 80. Now, my mom is over 80. My in-laws are over 80. I love people over 80. I aspire to be one of them one day. But if you're building an economy, if you're trying to recruit, whether it's Amazon or any other even medium-sized investor to come to the state, you have to tell them that you're going to have a workforce ready to go, and we don't. And as you rightly point out, we have an enormous number of universities. On a per capita basis, we're in the top five in the nation. We have universities from one end of the state to the other, and we have internationally known universities from Pitt, Penn State, Pennsylvania, UPenn, Carnegie Mellon, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to leave anybody out. I mean, but we have many universities with many areas of expertise. We are a great importer of students. We are a great exporter of graduates. And it's because they don't see an opportunity here all too often. They don't see that opportunity of finding a career that ties back in. So, look, I think the way you fix it is not through a government program or anything like that. I think it's through having a business plan that looks at the assets we have and tries to sit down with those leaders and try to grow it. And then it is having collaboration with our universities, not to mandate or dictate. I don't want any bureaucrat. I don't want any governor telling whether it's Villanova University or Westchester, what their curriculum ought to be. But by saying we have these opportunities with Google, we have these opportunities in energy, we have these opportunities in chemicals, and by the way, in the trades, in our trade schools and our community colleges, they're the people who are going to build these data centers. They're the people who are going to install the piping to run the energy. Men and women are going to make six figures in those industries. We need chemists to know what we're doing with the products coming out of the ground. So there's a multitude of things, but I'm not sure that we're tying it back into the universities. But more importantly, we're not really doing the things to recruit. And I'll share just an anecdote. At a recent dinner of sort of policymakers and entrepreneurs, one of the guests there pointed out that in Texas, Governor Abbott invited every major energy producer and every major employer to the governor's mansion, and they had a full-day workshop. And he said to them, I need your help. We need five times the energy that we currently produce, and I need it in 10 years because we're growing that fast, and our economy is going to grow and depend more on technology and more on energy. So I need you to tell me. I'm not going to tell you. I want you to tell me what I need to do from an investment, from a regulatory, from a tax to support you so that energy can grow and that businesses can get the energy they need and that businesses can burn that energy or use it smartly and more efficiently. Work with me on that plan. I can't ever recall a Pennsylvania governor sitting down with energy producers from oil, gas, coal, or so-called green energy, sitting down with major employers and saying, let's grow this together. And by the way, tell me, you make widgets, you power companies that make widgets, you tell me how to do it. And together we'll use common sense, we'll bring in the interested parties and we'll do this together. You're inviting somebody to be some part of something bigger. That's why our students leave, because we don't have a governor doing that, saying to those people, how do we grow it? You're not sitting down with the universities and saying, this is the vision of what Pennsylvania is going to look like in 2030. Help us get there. We need that kind of leadership. It begins with a plan, because we have more than enough resources. More than enough resources. What we lack is a plan and leadership and a signal to the business world and those people who invest dollars that Pennsylvania does want that kind of collaboration. I mean, imagine a governor saying, I can see great things. Here's where I want to go. Work with me, business leaders. Work with me, educators. Work with me, investors. And together, let's develop that plan and get it done. I would faint if that happened in Harrisburg.
Well, if you want answers to all of these problems, a great place to get it is at commonwealthfoundation.org. Guy Shiraki is a senior research fellow at the Commonwealth Foundation. You can also read his columns actually several times a week at Broad and Liberty, also Real Clear Pennsylvania. Guy Shiraki of the Commonwealth Foundation. Guy, always a pleasure to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for the opportunity to talk about it, and maybe we'll eventually push Harrisburg to think big.